Interview by Emily Reetham of Professor John Stewart. What are the origins and main thrust of the article?
The article was originally a paper given to a conference entitled The Era of Biomedicine, Science, Technology and Health in France and in Great Britain, 1945 to 1965, held at the Maison Française in Oxford in February 2005. The article is based on the idea that the NHS, the National Health Service, has always been an extremely popular institution with the British public, and apparently invulnerable politically, at least up until the present. However, for various reasons, and despite the service's undoubted benefits, there have been constraints upon it, and that these have hindered the development of a unified service with a strong emphasis on social and preventive medicine. There's a brief case study in the article of the Medical Research Council, a body with the purported aim of providing research in the biomedical field. And by the post-war period, there was great optimism about what biomedicine could achieve. However, there were, as far as the MRC was concerned, to be problems. The opportunities afforded by the National Health Service were enshrined in its fundamental principles. It was famously universal, comprehensive, and free at the point of consumption. And there has been more or less continuously rising expenditure, with the service consuming more and more of gross domestic product. Also, of course, the National Health Service has had, or would appear to have had, a significant impact on health outcomes. People have got healthier, they have a free service, more or less, available to them. However, there have been constraints on the National Health Service. Expenditure was not as much as it might have been, and it has always been the subject of political concern, and this has been the case since the National Health Service was founded back in 1948. The structures and attitudes of, for example, the medical profession have been something of a problem, and an emphasis on curative rather than preventive medicine has prevented the development of preventive medicine, and also we have the unintegrated nature of National Health Service structures. The National Health Service had what was called a tripartite structure when it was first formed, and these three parts of the service were, one might argue, not terribly well coordinated. And there's also wider issues of constraints upon the National Health Service. How do you allocate resources in welfare states, and where might Britain stand in international context in this respect? We do spend a lot of money in this country on healthcare, but other countries spend a higher proportion of the gross domestic product, and in fact Britain is somewhere in the middle of the league table of advanced industrial nations. And just to go back to the Medical Research Council, the MRC, it provided an interesting case study of a body which, as I said earlier, was designed to pursue research in biomedicine, but again has been, one might argue, starved of resources to put forward some of the things it wanted to put forward.
Okay, so what is the historiographical location of this article?
Well, that's an interesting point. As with all of us who research the National Health Service, I think the historiographical starting point would be the work of Charles Webster and his comprehensive discussions and analysis of the development of the National Health Service since its origins up until about the 1980s, Webster's so-called official history, and then his political history. And like a lot of other historians, I owe a huge amount to Webster's work. And of course, the National Health Service has not been short of commentators. There's been any number of studies on the National Health Service almost since its very early days. Nonetheless, I think the Medical Research Council remains relatively underexplored as a medical institution. I think most people know of the existence of the Medical Research Council, but with a few exceptions, there hasn't really been any extensive study of it. And I think what I sought to do in this article was begin to develop a bit more of a historical sense of the MRC. The second way in which I think the article is original, if you like, and adds to our knowledge of the National Health Service and its history since 1948, is that the political economy of the National Health Service has been relatively underexplored, it seems to me. And this is not simply in terms of expenditure and income, but also the interrelationship between expenditure and income with political, professional, and structural factors. So I think while people have clearly written about the National Health Service as a, as it were, as an economic phenomenon, the broader sense of a political economy of the National Health Service is something which I sought to contribute to. And in turn, and I think the third way in which this is located in the historiography and seeks to move on the historiography of the National Health Service is the relationship between the processes of the National Health Service and the development of biomedicine and similarly of social medicine and public health. Again, these are topics which have been explored and touched upon by various scholars, but nonetheless what I'm suggesting is that we need to see them, as it were, the failure to develop preventive medicine, social medicine under the National Health Service in a much broader context, to do with its political economy, to do with professional attitudes, to do with structural constraints.
Okay, so what would you say are the analytical possibilities that this article opens up?
I think the future research possibilities are potentially opened up by this article, and I would hope this article would provoke, would be, first of all, more discussion of the Medical Research Council. As I say, this is a body which really has not received the scholarly attention from historians that I think it deserves, and is a body which has an important role in promoting medical research, as its very title would suggest. And there's a whole raft of issues around that to do with who is going to carry out research in biomedicine, for example. So I think that is one of the research possibilities that the article opened up. The second one was more to do with professions. I think there's more to be done on the ongoing role of professional bodies in shaping health policy. It was famously the case, of course, that the British Medical Association was, shall we say, rather hostile to the introduction of the National Health Service. That notwithstanding, professional bodies have been very important in helping to shape health policy since 1940, and this is something that particularly interests me, and I think is again worthy of further research. And the third point, I suppose, was how, as historians, do we assess success in healthcare and in healthcare systems, where, as the record shows, demand will always outstrip supply? And again, it's been one of the characteristics of the National Health Service that however much money has been spent on it, there is more that could be spent, and that people have rising expectations, that pharmaceuticals cost more and more, with advances in medical technology, there are greater economic and financial demands on the service. So how do we actually assess something like success in healthcare? And I think this throws up the importance of a historical understanding of an institution like the National Health Service and how that historical understanding can help in modern policy processes.
Right, thank you very much, Professor John Stewart.